Brother Stephen, please.
Good evening. The friendship between David and Jonathan was a special friendship. And we're not actually given all that much information in the Bible about this friendship, not as much information as I think we would have liked. There aren't that many verses that connect them together, and we have to piece them together. But if we do, what we find, what is immediately apparent, is that their friendship was a friendship the like of which few of us will ever experience. David described their friendship like this in 1 Samuel chapter 26. Upon learning of the death of his friend Jonathan, he says this of their relationship. He says in verse 26 of, actually 2 Samuel 1 verse 26, he says, "I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of woman. How are the mighty fallen, and the weapons of war perished?" This is how Jonathan viewed his relationship, his friendship with Jonathan. In 1 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 1 of what we read this evening, we have a brief perspective of how Jonathan viewed his relationship with David. In 1 Samuel 18 and verse 1, we read, "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul." We're told that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. It's interesting, if you look up this word knit, if you look where it's used in the Bible, there's another incident which it comes across where I think it expresses the same sort of relationship, the same sort of attitude. And that's in Genesis chapter 44. And verse 30, in this incident, Judah is speaking before Joseph, and he's describing to Joseph the relationship between Benjamin and his father, and what would happen to his father if Benjamin did not return. And in Genesis chapter 44 and at verse 30, we read, "Now therefore, when I come to thy servant my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life." The word bound is the same word as knit we find in 1 Samuel 18 and verse 1. And so you see that Jonathan's life became bound up. They had a relationship that was bound up in each other's lives. And that was what their friendship was like. They were bound up in each other's lives. They were knit together. When we read of the friendship between David and Jonathan, and the question that inevitably arises is, how did this friendship develop? What was it that held these two men, that brought these two men together? And most importantly for us, how can we experience and develop friendships like this in our lives as well? If you compare David and Jonathan, you will find that they were very different people in many ways. David and Jonathan came from two very different walks of life. Jonathan was a Benjamite. He was the crown prince of Israel, the firstborn son of King Saul. And ever since his birth, he would have been raised with the goal of being king of Israel. He would have had the best education there was to have in the land. He would have had the best military training. He would have been one of the best equipped. He would have had experience in politics, in society, in the business of running the kingdom. David, on the other hand, was from Judah. He was the youngest of eight sons born to Jesse, a Bethlehemite. David, it seems, was a country boy. He grew up among his father's flocks and herds, and he was trained at a young age to care for his father's sheep. There would have been about a 20-year age difference between David and Jonathan. We're not told this directly, but we can infer it from the fact that when David became king in Hebron, he was 30 years of age. And at the same time, we're told that Ishbosheth, the youngest of Saul's four sons, was 40 years of age at this time. And so you can infer from this that, being as Jonathan was the eldest of Saul's sons, there was likely around a 20-year age gap between these two men. And yet, despite this age gap, despite their differences in backgrounds, they became very close friends. I think to understand this friendship, we need to look at the time, at the incident when they first became friends. The incident occurs in 1 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 1 as we read. But we need to look at the background of this, which is in 1 Samuel 17, where David kills the giant Goliath. We have in 1 Samuel 18 at the very beginning, or at the end of chapter 17 and connecting to the beginning of chapter 18, we have David returning from the battle with the Philistines. He's killed a giant. He's joined in the battle with the rest of the Israelites where they've gone on to defeat the Philistine army. And he comes back and he's called before Saul and before Abner. And he's interviewed by them. And at the end of this interview, we come to 1 Samuel 18 verse 1. And we're told that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And really the question is, how is it that after this brief experience with each other, was it that Jonathan's soul became knit to the soul of David? Why does Jonathan respond so quickly to David? What is it about this incident that caused this reaction in him? Well, once again, to answer this, we need to look back into the background of this incident. In chapter 17, when the giant Goliath is challenging Israel, and throughout this chapter, we don't find Jonathan mentioned at all. I think his absence is very conspicuous. You see, the giant is challenging the armies of Israel. He's challenging the gods of Israel. We read in 1 Samuel 17, verse 8, his challenge. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose ye a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. The reaction of Saul and his men to this challenge by the Philistine was that they were afraid and they were dismayed. Was Jonathan also afraid and dismayed? Well, the information we have about Jonathan in 1 Samuel seems to indicate that Jonathan would not have been afraid of this giant. In chapter 13, we read of how he and his band of men attacked a garrison of the Philistines and destroyed them. And then in chapter 14, you can read of how he and his armor bearer went up a hill and defeated a group of Philistines that were standing at the top of the hill. And you read how he asked God for help and guidance in this, and God said, go up, I will deliver them to you. And he went up and they were delivered to him. Take notice of the faith that Jonathan expresses here. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 14 and at verse 6. This was Jonathan's attitude in life. 1 Samuel chapter 14 and verse 6. And Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, come, and let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. And his armor bearer said unto him, do all that is in thine heart. Turn thee, behold, I am with thee according to thy heart. Then said Jonathan, behold, we will pass over unto these men, and we will discover ourselves unto them. If they say thus unto us, tarry until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place, and we will not go up unto them. But if they say thus, come up unto us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hand, and there shall be a sign unto us. Jonathan realized that if God was with you, it didn't matter the odds that were against you. And he demonstrated his belief in this and his trust in his God in this incident. And God was with him and he was successful. The odds here were 10-1. It would seem that the odds of fighting a giant or where it was at least 1-1 odds would have been better. So where is Jonathan when Goliath comes along? Is he afraid of this giant? Well, past history indicates that Jonathan would not have been afraid. So why doesn't he respond? Why doesn't he go up and kill this giant who is challenging the armies of Israel? Well, there are a number of possible answers. One is that he may not have been there. It seems in other battles, Jonathan was with one part of the army in one place, and Saul was with the other part of the army in someplace else. And so maybe they were in different places, and Jonathan wasn't around to go and fight this giant. And yet we read in 1 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 16 how long this giant challenged Israel. And it says, "And the Philistines drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. That's an awful long time to be sitting around doing nothing. You would think that no matter how far away Jonathan was, he could have heard about this challenge and come and responded to it. Well, that's a possibility that Jonathan didn't do that, that he was just away and didn't hear about it. I think there are better explanations. Another explanation could be that Jonathan was waiting for his father to act, for his father to take on his position as king, as leader of the people, and to go up and fight this giant. Saul was the tallest man in Israel. He was a head and shoulders taller than everyone else. He was the giant of Israel. It seems it would be his place to go and fight the giant of the Philistines. It may have been that Jonathan did not want to usurp his father's authority. He had done this before and had bad consequences. And maybe he was waiting for his father to finally take on his role as leader. Well, that's another possibility. There's a third possibility, and to look at this possibility, we need to once again go back and look at some of the context. In 1 Samuel chapter 13, we're given a message that Samuel gave to Saul. We're told in 1 Samuel chapter 13 and at verse 13, "And Samuel said to Saul, 'Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart. The Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee.'" So we have Samuel telling Saul that God is going to give his kingdom to somebody else. Turn with me to 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 28. This is reiterated by Samuel. He says in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 28, "And Samuel said unto him, 'The Lord hath rent the kingdom of Israel from thee this day, and hath given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou.'" Or if you look at the end of verse 23 in this chapter, "Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king." God had rejected Saul from being king of Israel. But in rejecting Saul and rejecting the family of Saul, God was also rejecting Jonathan for being king. Jonathan was the crown prince. He would have inherited the throne from his father. But Samuel is making it very clear that the kingdom is going to go to someone else. Jonathan would have spent his life preparing for his role as king, but God made it very clear that he would not be the king he thought he was going to be. And so we come to the story of David and Goliath, and Jonathan doesn't do anything. And he sits around and he waits. Why does he wait? Well, we come to our third possible reason. And this reason, I think, also helps us to answer how it was that Jonathan warmed up so quickly to David. Jonathan had the courage to face the giant. We can see that from his actions previously. He would have recognized, like David did, that the giant was not just opposing the armies of Israel, he was opposing the God of Israel. And in doing so, that would be his downfall. But he was waiting. And I believe he was waiting because Jonathan had prayed to God for direction in his life about what he should do with this incident. We know Jonathan does this because he did this before. And it seems that God had directed him to do nothing, to wait along with everyone else, to wait for somebody else that God would send to rescue Israel, to save Israel, somebody who would have the faith, who would have the trust in God to be able to oppose this giant. And in David, I think Jonathan finds the answer to his prayer. In David, he finds somebody else who shared his faith, who shared his motivation in life of serving his God. Compare just for a moment what we read about Jonathan's perspective on life and David's perspective, which we read about in 1 Samuel chapter 17 and at verse 45. It reads there in 1 Samuel 17 and at verse 45. Then said David to the Philistine, "Thou comest to me with sword and with spear and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and will give the carcasses of the hosts of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." David realized, like Jonathan realized, that the battle was God's, and if God was with you, you could not lose. And if God was against you, you could not win. Jonathan saw in David a person that was like himself. He realized that if God was on your side, you were going to succeed. And I think this also helped Jonathan warm up to David, helped establish a friendship with David. Because Jonathan saw that there was someone like himself there, and he had been lacking someone who had the same faith that he had. And that's the interesting thing about the truth. When you share something like the truth with someone else, there is an immediate connection. You know that they are going to share the same motivations in life. They're going to respond to situations the same way you do because they fear the same God and they're trying to serve the same God. And there is a joining of their souls in this. Jonathan had been surrounded by people who were relatively lukewarm about the truth. They served God, but they did it more mechanically. They did it half-heartedly. His father, who should have been a spiritual leader, seems never really understood what it meant to serve God. For him, God was more of a good luck charm. God was something that was mysterious, something that he never really made a priority in his life. It seems this was characteristic of the people that surrounded Saul. So when Jonathan finally meets someone like David, someone who shares his faith, there is a connection. And there was a friendship that was established. But there was something more here than just a connection between two spiritual giants. There was something else, it seems, that Jonathan had been praying about. And we find this if we read verse 3 and 4 of 1 Samuel chapter 18. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 3 and 4, we read, "Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David, and his garments, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle." This is a rather peculiar thing that Jonathan did. Jonathan gives him his robe, his sword, his bow, his belt, his armor. Consider for a moment what we found out in 1 Samuel chapter 13, verse 22, that in the whole army of Israel, there was only two swords that were found. They were found with Jonathan and with Saul. And Jonathan takes his sword, his precious sword, and he gives it to David. And he gives his bow to David. For Jonathan, it seems that a bow was one of his weapons of choice. Later on in his life, when he wants to go and meet David privately in a field, when he wants to go and meet David without drawing any attention to himself and what he is going to do, he goes out on the pretense of practicing his bowmanship. Obviously, this was something that Jonathan did often. This was such an everyday thing that Jonathan did, going out to practice his marksmanship, that nobody would have taken a second thought to seeing Jonathan going out into a field with his bow once again. His bow was a special thing to him. We're also told in 2 Samuel 1 and 18, when Jonathan laments for David, that this is the lament of the bow. Jonathan gives this bow to David. Jonathan gives David his robe, his princely garments. See, Jonathan was the crown prince, and he would have had clothing that distinguished him as such. What is Jonathan doing, giving David his armor, his weapons, his clothing? These are not the normal tokens of friendship. The only thing I can think that answers this question, what is Jonathan doing, is that Jonathan somehow knows that David is God's selection to be the next king of Israel. And Jonathan, by giving him his armor, by giving him his weapons, by giving him his robe, is making it very clear that he is not going to stand in the way of David. He's indicating that David is now in his place. David is now the crown prince of Israel. Jonathan is making it very clear that he is going to step aside for God's choice of who is going to be the next king of Israel. He's going to get out of the way. Because you see, David is God's choice. And Jonathan realizes that it's more important to be on God's side than to be on anyone else's side. But not only does he step aside for David, he goes and he actively supports David. And he's a friend to David. And he's a companion, an encouragement. Well, how did Jonathan realize this so quickly? How did he realize that David was God's selection for the next king of Israel? Well, the only answer I can come to is that he had been praying about what he should do. He realized that God had rejected Saul and rejected him from being king. And he was in a difficult position. And he must have been praying to God about what he should do and how should he respond and who was going to be the next king. He must have been asking God for guidance and direction. We know this is what Jonathan does. He did this before. And I think somehow in this incident with David and with Goliath, that somehow a prayer of his was answered. And somehow this indicated to Jonathan who David was. I want to, for a moment, consider Jonathan's response to David here. His response is very different than Saul's response. It was a response that cannot have been easy. God had rejected him from being king. God had picked someone else for the job he had spent his life preparing for. God had said, "No, you will not be king. I'm choosing someone else." And I think the example that Jonathan gives us is really an incredible one and something we can learn from. Because, you see, Jonathan put aside his pride. He put aside his own feelings. He put aside all the hard work he'd been doing in learning the business of being king. He looked past the politics. And he looked past the temporary glory. And he decided that if God wanted someone else to be king, that he was going to accept that. But even more than that, he was going to bear no ill will, no grudge against David. In fact, he was going to do the exact opposite. He was going to love David. Love David as his own soul. Because what was more important than any of these things to Jonathan was his God. And here was somebody else that shared his faith, and shared his trust and his confidence in his God. And that was more powerful to Jonathan than anything else in the world. His selflessness and his self-sacrifice is really incredible. He trusted that God would do what was right, and he was willing to make the best of whatever happened. He realized it was his job to work with God's decisions, and he would do that to the best of his ability. This really isn't an easy thing to do in life. But that's what Jonathan did. And because he was willing to do this, because he was willing to trust that his God was right, God opened up to him in his life a very special relationship. A relationship founded on spiritual things. A relationship based on a common love and trust in their God. And that really is an example for us of how we should treat each other in this ecclesia. We need to put aside any differences that divide us. We need to hold on to the things that are really important. Hold on to our common faith in God, our common goal of salvation. We need to express the love of Jonathan to each other. It seems if we look into the relationship between David and Jonathan, that Jonathan became a mentor to David. He was older than David. He had more experience than David. And David needed help because he was going to go through a rather tumultuous time in his life. And Jonathan, it seems, became the person that was beside David, the person who strengthened David in his God. It's interesting, when David was on the run from Saul, David had just taken the town of Keilah and been forced to flee because Saul was going to trap him in that town. And David was on the run, and it seemed that he was just one step away from death. Jonathan goes to him. We read about this in 1 Samuel chapter 23. Starting at verse 14. And David abode in the wilderness in strongholds and remained in a mountain in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God delivered him not into his hand. And David saw that Saul was come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a wood. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. And he said unto him, Fear not, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find thee, and thou shalt be king over Israel, and I shall be next unto thee. And that also Saul, my father, knoweth. And they two made a covenant before the Lord. And David abode in the wood, and Jonathan went to his house. You know, it's somewhat ironic that Saul is hunting all over the place for David, and his son goes and finds him immediately. It's also ironic to consider why it is that Saul is hunting for David. We were told this in 1 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 30, why it is that Saul is hunting for David. 1 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 30, we read, Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said unto him, Thou son of the perverse, rebellious woman, do not I know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion, and to the confusion of thy mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor thy kingdom. Wherefore, now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die. Saul wanted to kill David to prevent David from being king. What's interesting, Saul is an old man at this time. Saul is going against the revealed word of God, trying to kill David because Saul loves Jonathan, and Saul wants Jonathan to be king. Saul wants his kingdom to continue with his son Jonathan. And yet, in all this, Jonathan has accepted David. He's accepted that David will be the next king. And he's actively supporting David. And Saul continues on, even though he's fighting a losing battle. Now, coming back to Jonathan when he strengthens David in the wood, it's interesting what Jonathan does for David, how he strengthens him. You notice that he starts off by strengthening him in God. He encourages him. He points out that God's in control of everything. And that's the first place we need to start off when strengthening each other, is strengthen each other in the word of God. But look what also Jonathan strengthens him in. Jonathan points out that David will be king. God's will be done in his life. And although David cannot see how this can possibly happen, although the kingdom seems so very far away from David at this time, Jonathan encourages him by pointing out that you can trust in God. God's will be done. That you just have to wait. You just have to trust in God. He encourages David that no matter what happens, to fall back on his trust and his faith in his God. And that really is maybe one of the most important lessons for us and what we need to do for each other. We need to strengthen each other in our God. We need to encourage each other to look out in the world around us and trust that God's will is being done and will be done. God has said that his son will return to this earth and that he will inherit the throne of his father David. Jesus will be king over the whole world. And even though we don't see how this can possibly happen, even though it may seem very far away, even though we can't always understand how God is working in our lives, is working in the world around us, we can have confidence that he is working and that his will be done. And the kingdom will come. And we need to strengthen each other in these things. And this may be the most important lesson of all that we can learn from the friendship of David and Jonathan. Because it is in this that we need to reflect. We need to reflect to each other this hope and this confidence in our God that we see in David and Jonathan. Thank you.